Humid side, 18 to 23 degrees. For Northern Ireland, a grey, murky start to the morning, gradually perhaps turning a little bit brighter into the afternoon, but still with a lot of cloud around, potentially thick enough for an odd light shower. Temperatures 16 degrees here. And finally, for Scotland, a lot of cloud to start the day with some fog patches in the east. Outbreaks of rain from the northeast of Scotland pushing into the southeast of Scotland during the afternoon. Most of the rain will turn increasingly light and patchy, but it'll turn brighter across the far north of Scotland, but fresher as well. Temperatures 13 to 14 Celsius. Here. That's where the weather's looking. Arlene.
Thanks, Chris. And now on Radio 4 in Book of the Week, we continue reading from Yung Chang's new biography, which reassesses the reputation of the 19th century ruler, Empress Dowager Cixi. The death of Emperor Shengfeng in 1861 saw Cixi's 5-year-old son ascend the throne. Unhappy with the choice of regents, Cixi cemented an important political alliance, and together they orchestrated a coup. Pixen Lim continues reading The Empress Dowager Cixi, the concubine who launched modern China.
Though her son succeeded to the throne, Cixi had no political power. In fact, as a concubine, she was not even the new emperor's official mother. That was the role of Empress Zhen, who immediately assumed the title of Dowager Empress. Cixi knew she needed the same title. Only then would she acquire the status of the mother of the emperor. A clash with Empress Zhen seemed inevitable, and the two women had an emotional row for the first time in their relationship. But they soon found a solution. Court records were trawled, and it was discovered that almost exactly 200 years previously, there had been a similar case. With this precedent, the Board of Regents awarded Cixi the title. The friendship of the two women was unscathed, and they were referred to as the two Dowager Empresses. The two women did more than resolve a major problem. They went on to form a political alliance and launch a coup. Cixi was 25 years old and Empress Zhen a year younger. Facing them were 8 powerful men in control of the state machine. The women were well aware of the risks they were taking. A coup was treason. And if it failed, the punishment would be the most painful, Ling Qi. Death of 1,000 cuts. But they were willing to take the risk. Not only were they determined to save their son and the dynasty, they also rejected the prescribed life of imperial widows, essentially living out their future years as virtual prisoners in the harem. They secured 2 of the late emperor's half-brothers as allies, Prince Gong and Prince Chun. Prince Gong agreed to get someone in his camp to petition for the two Dowager Empresses to take part in decision-making. As expected, the regents rejected the petition unequivocally on the grounds that the late emperor's will could not be altered, plus the cast-iron rule that women must be kept away from politics. Cixi now had to make the regents do something inexcusable so the princes would agree to oust them. She and Empress Zhen set out to provoke an offence. Cradling the child emperor, they summoned the regents and engaged them in a heated confrontation about the petition. The men grew angry and replied contemptuously that as the regents, they did not have to answer to the two women. As they roared, the child became scared and cried and wet his pants. Cixi had engineered a major offence by the regents. That they dared to shout and behave disrespectfully in front of the emperor and had frightened him. She drafted by hand an edict in her son's name, condemning the regents and announcing their dismissal, which was supported by the two princes. In a winsome show of grief, the two Dowager Empresses denounced the regents for bullying them and the child emperor. In order to topple the regents, they had to be guilty of treason. But the offences that had been cited did not justify this charge. As the deliberations ground to a halt, the two dowager empresses intervened with a smoking gun. The eight men, they claimed, had forged their late husband's will. So grave was this new charge that the three main offenders were sentenced to death by 1,000 cuts. In a calculated demonstration of magnanimity, Cixi greatly reduced the sentences, executing only their de facto leader and by the much less painful decapitation. So on the ninth day of the 10th moon, 1861, on the eve of Cixi's 26th birthday, it was proclaimed to the whole empire in the name of the new emperor that, from now on, all state matters will be decided personally by the two dowager empresses, who will give orders to the grand advisor and the grand councillors for them to carry out. The decrees will still be issued in the name of the emperor. Cixi had become the real ruler of China. At the same time, she felt obliged to declare that it was not her wish, nor that of the Empress Shen, to rule. She begged the population to appreciate their dilemma and promised that the young emperor would take over as soon as he entered adulthood. The signs of a new era were immediately apparent. Prince Gong now headed the Grand Council, and the half-dozen new councillors were intelligent and sensible men like him. Through Prince Gong's reports, Cixi had come to the conclusion that amicable relations with the West were possible, and she began to strive for such a relationship. This Herculean process was presided over by the Dowager Empresses from the harem. They got up between 5 and 6 in the morning to be ready at the audience hall by 7 o'clock. They would be dressed splendidly, with phoenix-patterned formal robes, pearl-studded shoes, and bejewelled guitar-shaped coiffure. In the hall, they sat side by side, behind a yellow silk screen, through which they discussed business with the grand councillors. When the meetings were over, the two women gave audiences to officials from around the empire. The child emperor, Dong Shi, now sat on a small throne in front of the screen, facing the officials, while the women remained vaguely visible behind him. Cixi was the one who usually asked the questions. While in the harem, as many observed, she was vivacious and fond of laughing. But the moment a eunuch came to announce on his knees that her sedan chair was ready to take her to the audience hall, she would switch off her smiles and assume a daunting air. Empress Zhen was quiet and retiring, willingly playing second fiddle. After the audiences, back in their quarters, the women changed into less formal and more comfortable clothes and went through the day's reports. A lot of the daily work consisted of pure administration, such as approving official appointments. Empress Zhen dealt with these on her own, and most documents of this nature were stamped by her seal only. Policy was Cixi's domain. For 2 decades, the two women were to work in perfect harmony, until Empress Zhen's death in 1881. The fact that they remained lifelong friends, as well as political partners, was a most remarkable feat. Running the empire needed more language skills and more knowledge of the classics than Cixi possessed. So she studied with educated eunuchs. It is commonly claimed that Prince Gong made all the decisions for Cixi, who, as a semi-illiterate woman, was limited in knowledge and experience. The massive documented exchanges between them and between Cixi and the officials point to the contrary. That Prince Gong and all others, in fact, reported to Cixi, who was the decision-maker. Under Cixi, China now entered a long period of peace with the West. So she had noted the immense potential of international trade, whose centre was now Shanghai, where the Yangtze River flows into the sea. Shanghai showed her that opening up to the West presented a tremendous opportunity for her empire, and she seized it. The expansion of foreign trade obliged China to have an efficient and uncorrupt customs service. At Prince Gong's recommendation, Cixi appointed a 28-year-old Ulsterman from County Armagh, Robert Hart, to be Inspector General of Chinese Maritime Customs, where Hart had already been working. Born in the same year as she was, 1835, and educated at the Queen's College in Belfast, Hart had come to China first as a bright, earnest and innocent 19-year-old interpreter-to-be in the British Consular Service. His diaries show him to be a devout Christian, concerned with what was moral and just, and that he felt a deep sympathy for the Chinese. Under Hart, Chinese customs was transformed from an antiquated setup, anarchical and prone to corruption, into a well-regulated modern organisation which contributed enormously to China's economy. Employing Hart and a large number of other foreigners caused resentment in the civil service. It was a courageous move. The motto of Cixi's government was Make China Strong, Zijiang. Hart wanted to show Beijing how to achieve this through modernization. He wanted progress for China. And progress in those days meant modern mining, telegraph and telephone, and above all, the railway. The modernization projects proposed by Hart were, however, rejected by all those Cixi consulted, even the most reform-minded among them. They deface our landscape, invade our fields and villages, spoil our feng shui, and ruin the livelihood of our people, was the response. Among the many objections raised was that Westerners would have access to China's underground treasures and might seek to control them. After more futile lobbying, Western companies gave up. China's industrial age was delayed. But it was to creep in through another door. Cixi's court was united in favour of building a modern army and arms industry. Foreign officers were engaged to train troops and engineers employed to teach the manufacture of weaponry. Technology and equipment were bought. In 1866, the building of a modern fleet started in earnest. In the space of just a few years, 9 steamships were built of a quality that apparently could hold its own against Western ships. No bottles of champagne were cracked open when they were launched, only solemn ceremonies offering apologies to the celestial queen and the gods of rivers and of soil, all of whom the steamers were about to distress. When the first ship sailed resplendently into the harbour of Tianjin in 1869, crowds of Chinese and foreign inhabitants gathered to witness the spectacle, and those who were involved in its building wiped away proud tears. By the end of the first decade of her rule, Cixi had not only revived a war-torn country, but had also founded a modern navy and began building a modern army and arms industry with state-of-the-art equipment. Although full-scale industrialization did not take off immediately in this ancient land, which had its own strong and deep-rooted traditions and religious sentiments, modern enterprises were appearing one by one. Modern education was introduced to train the engineers, technicians, officers and crew. Railways and telegraphs were waiting just beyond the horizon. Medieval China had taken its first step towards modernization under the Empress Dowager.
Pik Sen Lim was reading from Empress Dowager Cixi, the concubine who launched modern China, by Yung Chan. The book was abridged by Sarah Davies and produced by Gemma Jenkins. This is BBC Radio 4, and now the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Wednesday the 25th of September. There are warnings of gales in Fitzroy. The general synopsis at 1800. New low expected German Bight, 1007 by 1800 Wednesday. The area forecast for the next 24 hours. Viking, north or northeast, 4 or 5, showers moderate or good. North at 0, south at 0, variable 4, rain or showers, moderate or good. Forties Cromarty, easterly or northeasterly, 4 or 5, increasing 6 at times, becoming cyclonic 5 to 7 for a time later in southeast 40s. Rain for a time, good, occasionally poor. Fourth, Tyne, Dogger. Southeast, backing northeast, 4, increasing 5 or 6 for a time, occasionally.